Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, threw the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
The green and yellow Jefferson.
It is.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler.
And we are here broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading. This is Jefferson State of Mind, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM. We are your talk radio. And we're streaming live at KCNRradio.com, KCNRradio.com, all over the world. And we archive our programs 5 minutes after, right, Alex?
That's correct. So, good morning, Ukraine.
That's good morning, Vietnam.
5 minutes after we're done, you can go to the archives, share this program, share it. I hope you all listened to the program last week. Does anybody know what day it is today?
It's April 19th.
And what does that mean? What happened on April 19th?
Paul Revere's ride.
1775. What happened on April 19th?
I thought it was Paul Revere Road. Nope.
Lexington.
Well,
the shot heard round the world.
Yes, but Paul Revere warned everybody that the redcoats were coming.
Well, he did. But the reason I mentioned a shot heard round the world is we have had a shot last week that was heard all around Shasta County by our very own Patrick Jones and Lori Jones. How are you two this morning?
Very good.
Great. Thank you.
And I think
I don't remember much, before flush toilets. That's
sliced bread.
Thanks for sharing. Okay. So yeah, I mean, this has really been an eye-opening situation we've had. It's been kind of crazy that we've got a situation right now that we're even dealing with in this vein.
Well, and I can, let's go back a little bit and just talk about, I was on, playing around with Transparent California and, hit sheriffs and took a look at all the sheriffs. I look in the right-hand column, which I commonly do for pay and total pay and benefits, and there were some sheriffs at the $600,000 range, $500,000 range. Sheriff Johnson was $445,000 and so forth. And that's pay and benefits, and for public safety, the benefits are very high. Benefits are almost as much as your base pay because of the early retirements and so forth. So not surprising or anything, but I came back with Michael Johnson. I just wanted to look at his base pay. I looked at his base pay, and then I add base pay plus benefits, that should equal 445. Well, the benefit was zero. So you have the base pay times zero does not equal 445, and I thought, well, something clearly is wrong. He is our sheriff. He's not retired. And, well, with a little digging, he did retire. In fact, what he did was, and this has all been confirmed. I have talked directly to the sheriff, and it is confirmed that he is pulling his pension plus full pay. But what they did, and this is where the law did change in 2017 on a trader on a Senate bill that no one knew about, and gives them the legal ability to do it, but there are strict requirements.
That was a state Senate bill?
A Senate bill, California.
California state. Go ahead.
And it was a trailer bill, so you've got pages and pages of a whole bunch of pork, and it's no wonder why no one knew about this, but it allowed elected officials to separate and then start going into unlimited hours, which is what is happening with the sheriff. But there is a way that you have to do it. And so the way Michael Johnson did it, and then we're going to talk about another elected official that I just found out in Shasta County that did it. So now we have two, and we'll talk about that, is he basically quit. He resigned. You have to resign in order to do it, and then you have to get reappointed.
And when did he resign?
He resigned in early 2022, just before the primary election, To be able to do this, and that's what, and again, these aren't being disputed by anybody, and the numbers are there, and they're clear.
Wow.
So he resigned, and then you have to be reappointed. Now, he's the elected sheriff, so if you're an elected, he wasn't appointed, but it's the same thing. If you resign, who reappoints? The Board of Supervisors. Well, that didn't come to the Board of Supervisors. That was hidden from us, and so Matt Pontus, the crooked convict Matt Pontus, once again reappointed him with no authority. That had to go back to the board to reappoint. And we could choose to reappoint him or appoint someone else. And so this is where the law is most likely, in my opinion, that was not followed. Now, normally, slightly after this, a Ventura County sheriff, he was a commander. He retired. He ran for sheriff in that county, and he won, and he started the double dipping. But he was retired. Everybody knew that, and then he came back. Now, he didn't tell the public either. Sheriff Johnson kept this hidden, and the Ventura sheriff didn't tell the public, too. But there, they had a reporter that picked up on it a few months later and made it a big deal that, hey, you didn't tell people. Yeah, you can legally do this, but you didn't tell people. The newspaper there picked it up within a few months. Here, it's gone on for years because we don't have a newspaper anymore that's worth anything.
So just for clarity, okay, for the folks out there, the sheriff resigned.
He resigned.
He retired.
Correct.
Okay, then once he's retired, he's gone, and there should be at least either an appointment by the supervisors who would have the jurisdiction, and then there would be, or there would be a special election.
No, so, it's an appointment. They would make the appointment.
There wouldn't have to be a special election.
Right. No,
go ahead.
So, for example, when Eric McGreeny left the county,
okay,
because that's what he did, the board had a choice. They could reappoint, appoint someone, or it was close enough to the next election that they could have let that gone to the next election. That's what I had recommended. The board on a 4-1 vote chose to appoint Michael Johnson. And I suspect at that time, it was all laid out to Mike that, hey, you can work for about a year, and in 1 year from now, you'll be 55. And we just found out that you can, retire and start taking unlimited hours thereafter. So I suspect he knew it from the very beginning, and just simply all kept hidden from the public. Now, that was about 2 weeks ago I learned that. Now, just a couple days ago, I called our tax collector, Lori J. Scott. It looks like her benefit substantially reduced in 2024, and I asked if she separated. She said she did. And so she, too, now is double-dipping. And every time, and both with the sheriff and with the tax collector, the first things out of their mouth was, it's legal. and it can be legal, but I don't think the process that they used was the legal way to do it.
Wouldn't they be different anyway?
She's elected.
She's elected, yeah. So, but Does the Board of Supervisors have special jurisdiction to, if she retires, to appoint her position?
Absolutely. All the records. So it's the same situation,
man.
And she did it in early 2024. Now, I'll give her a little slack, only a little, because she's often ran unopposed.
Yeah.
No one was wanting to be really the tax collector, the most hated and feared person in the county. But the process, I'm not sure if it was legal. With Sheriff Johnson, it was very different. We had a very heated race in the 2022 primary. We had two gentlemen that had 28 years of law enforcement experience, and John Green had 28 years here in Shasta County. And if it had been known then that Michael Johnson was double dipping, something that his crew and his camp was alleging John Green would do,
mm-hmm.
That would have been a different race.
I remember that. Yeah.
And because John Green did retire as a sergeant, and he would come back as sheriff with pay, and so they were accusing him of attempting to double dip. Now, he may or may not have done it that way. He could have easily just started paying back into CalPERS at the sheriff's rate, and then when he retires, instead of getting retirement at the sergeant's rate, he gets sheriff's rate. So there was no known double dipping.
Gotcha.
But Sheriff Johnson was.
Well, and that would have made the race more balanced. People would have understood, okay, if they're both doing this, then okay, then you can go down that road and figure out if it's double dipping for both or
yeah. Well, John Green didn't do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Then he could have said, "Well, I would suspend my retirement," which you can do.
You can
suspend it, and then you can pick it up later after you're done serving wherever you're serving.
Correct. But they were accusing him of something that hadn't occurred.
Right.
And Michael Johnson was doing it at that time.
Isn't that how it is? Yeah. You throw the bone at somebody else. You say they're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So very few people knew about this, and I'm sure both the tax collector and the sheriff would have not liked these last 2 weeks to have existed, right? They don't want this information out to the public.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here on the radio today and last week, and I'll probably be talking directly to the board that, you know, this is wrong on a bunch of different levels. It may be illegal. I believe the process that was done here probably is. But at least the public should have had a discussion on it.
Well, doesn't the sheriff position, I'm just assuming, maybe I'm wrong, but do they sign some kind of a document talking about ethics and morals and doing the right thing on a regular, you know, as a law enforcement, highest law enforcement officer in the county? Do they sign something to that effect that this would violate?
I don't know when, but it isn't ethical because you're deliberately hiding information
right.
that you know the public would
That's
be interested.
That's my point. That's my point.
No, they would. This is people. I mean, you talk to 10 people, and 9 out of 10 people are not going to be thrilled with a sheriff taking home almost $500,000 a year.
Right.
You know, and it really does put stress on CalPERS, and it's already underfunded by 30%, and this isn't helping, mm-hmm. right? This is definitely not helping, and, you know, right now, in the past, the way the sheriffs would have done it is, you know, if that Senate bill hadn't passed in 17, Sheriff Johnson would be continuing to pay in, and then when he would retire, he would get sheriff's pay. And, you know, and I thought back to 2022, because we're the same age, and I thought, okay, it's, you know, he's 55, he's put 30 years in, he could retire right now,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't, so good for him. He wants to be sheriff, and so good for him. You know, he could, because what we see very common is the day you can retire in government,
mm-hmm.
They are gone that day. Pat Minturn was a great example. He was our interim CEO
mm-hmm.
for 6 months, and I mean when that 6 month hit, he wouldn't stay 4 hours longer. He was out and gone, office cleared out, wouldn't help out. We could have used his help for a few more months until the recruitment process cleared. He was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I thought, okay, good for Sheriff Johnson. Well, what I didn't know was the new law had passed, allowing him now to make a huge amount of money, a huge amount, and he kept it hidden from the public. And whether the newspaper knew it or not, it's hard to say, but they certainly didn't report.
Was that law, was that shared with county personnel office, you know, the HR? Was that shared with Board of Supervisors? Was that shared anywhere?
No. Yes and no. So the board did not know. The elected officials in the Board of Supervisors.
But what about the board at 2017 when it passed?
No. No one knew about this.
So there's no record of it.
No one knew of this. And our HR absolutely did because they had to set it up. Our CEO did. So there were certainly people in the county government that knew, and they all kept it quiet, all of them. And of course, you know, we've had good changes now, you know, with my getting into office. You know, the first change we saw was getting rid of Leonard Modi. What a great thing that was to rid ourselves of that pest of a person. And and then I exposed our CEO that he was a convicted felon. That was withheld from the public. He resigned 2 weeks later, so that was a good start. Health and Human Services, Donnell Ewert, got him going. He resigned. That was awesome. We fired the health officer. That was brilliant. So we've been cleaning a lot of things up that were wrong, and now we're just hearing about a couple more instances that are things that were kept hidden. Because when you hide stuff from the board, you're hiding it from the public.
Absolutely.
Because that's who we represent. And so here again, in that 4 year period that I was there, we're now learning that the sheriff and the tax collector during my time resigned, somehow mysteriously got reappointed and started double dipping. Now there may be more. You know, you have to be, obviously if a person is elected in one of these positions and you're in a 30 or 40 years old, you're not ready to retire yet. But obviously for the folks that are older, You're going to get to that point where you're going to be eligible to retire, and you have this possibility of double dipping. But there's a process to do it, and it wasn't something that I had really wanted to be working on right about it this time. But I'm upset about it because, again, it's one more thing that happened when I was in office that was covered up. And we're going to talk about the DA here fairly soon, too. But that whole investigation on her and her misconduct, that was almost entirely covered up as well.
You know, the thing that's really remarkable to me is that, I heard nothing for a while there but praises out of our current Board of Supervisors for Michael Johnson. You know, and also, they seem to be wanting to back the DA on some things we'll talk about in the second half hour. But, I just can't, and the cameras are making everybody crazy. No one wants those cameras out there. No one wants their privacy being infringed on by the government. And, gee, do you think the government would ever use anything like that nefariously?
Well, with regards to the sheriff, I praised him when I thought that he was still, going to continue to work after retirement. I said, well, good for him, right? That was good. Unfortunately, we didn't have all the information. And, and some of the board, they weren't there for the first 2 years of what I saw. And so for, past chair Cry and current chair Kellstrom, they saw stuff from 23 moving forward. And by not seeing those first couple years, was pretty eye-opening and significant, and the work that led up to them getting elected, there was lots of chunks that they didn't see. I suspect now you'll probably see a few electeds probably distancing themselves from the sheriff and the tax collector for the double dipping, and some people have said, well, it's legal, so hey, why wouldn't they do it? And that's not quite the point, because, again, I'm not certain that this was done legal, but it should never be hidden from the public, which it was.
So, Patrick, to sort of sum up, the process is legal if it's done properly. It is through legislation at the state level. The person resigns and then is reappointed. Legal.
Correct.
However, they had to be reappointed by the board. And that did not happen. Right there is an illegality taking place.
Correct. If they would have waited till the end of their term and done it in that cycle, that's what the law says. Or if they would have done it like the Ventura sheriff did, where he was retired and then he ran, that is allowed. But in this case, they were doing the same job. And it was midterm, and they did it quietly. And it says you have to resign. That's what it says. You have to resign. And it says typically you cannot do this unless you do this or this. So there are strict requirements on it. And, and when I confirmed this both with the tax collector and with the sheriff, I could tell in their voices this, some unsettledness in their voices. I have asked the CEO to look into this, and so I hope he thoroughly does. And we will get to the bottom of it to see if it was done correctly or not. And again, to my reading of the law, they were very strict as to how you would do this. And my concern here is, obviously now, last week I thought, I hope it hasn't happened to another position, and it already has, right? So now we know of two. I have confirmed at least two. There may be more.
I think that it's almost like a sense of entitlement that they have, thinking, well, if the money's out there, we should grab it. When you look at the private sector, if you get a raise from your boss, even though maybe it's not going to help the bottom line much, but you get a raise from the boss, they still take the raise. But I can't imagine being a public servant, and as Wynn was saying, they have to at least put their hand on a Bible for the Constitution, how you can have those kinds of ethics.
Well, and I was basically fooled because I was seeing the sheriff staying on and saying, good for him, he's going to stay on. But in fact, he's making a huge amount of money but keeping that quiet. And so it was very, very misleading.
Patrick, can we backtrack just a hair and go back to Minturn, because they kind of pulled the wool over the board's eyes because you specifically asked with Minturn, and the reason he only went to 6 months, we didn't want him to come in there and spike his retirement, right? It takes a year to do that, but they weren't honest on that one.
After Matt Pontus resigned and left, we needed a CEO, a temporary CEO. So Pat Minturn was about to retire, within a day, and so he said he would, be acting CEO for the next 6 months. And I thought, okay, 6 months, it won't spike his salary, that'll be fine. And so, and then I find out in open session, I said, thanks for, helping us out and not spiking your salary. And then at that time, Chair Boss said, I thought you knew. And it's like, no what? And he goes, well, it will. And I said, well, how? It's only 6 months. But you have to add in all his sick leave and his time off and all this. And he had enough there to get over the year. So what ended up happening is he was, by doing that 6 months, he spiked his salary $40,000 more for retirement for the rest of his life for doing a six-month stint.
And if it's so moral and it's so legal and it's ethical, why is it a secret?
Exactly. Right. And so very disappointed in that because he only really did it for the money. He wasn't helping Shasta County. He was helping himself. And so many of them do it when you're looking at money.
Anyway, we have Mark Baird on the line. How are you, sir? How you been, buddy?
Well, I'm doing okay. How are you guys doing? Sounds like you got your hands full there.
Yeah, we do. And in the second half hour, Patrick has some stuff on the DA. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, a couple things. Number one, when I took the oath as a sheriff's deputy, we recognized from our post-training and our training, and it was very definitive, and it was pressed into us that we lead by example. In other words, our conduct is the conduct that you would hope the community would emulate. And for us, I couldn't even go into a gas station and get a free cup of coffee. And I'd tell the guy, no, I can't take that. Oh, no, we love it when you come by. We just want to thank you for your service, and this coffee's on the house. And I said, look, if you're not going to charge me for the coffee, I have to leave. That's not ethical. I can't take gifts from people. And I'd either pay for the coffee or leave it on the counter. And that's a stupid cup of coffee. But that betrays a larger, a sense of what the purpose of the office is. And if the sheriff won't set an example, who will? And if the, registrar won't set an example or the tax collector won't set an example, who will? Because everybody's watching that saying, well, yeah, I mean, hell, it's legal. Why not? Why can't I steal too? What's a few hundred thousand bucks among friends anyway? In California,
yeah.
In California spends all day, every day stealing from us. I mean, my wife and I just got back from Arizona and, you're paying $7-$8 a gallon for diesel in California and $5 in Arizona, and they're not spending it on fixing the roads, by the way. It's just, and then you have a state like California that they use the law. The law is not to protect people. The law is a bludgeon. The law is a club against the people of California. You pay 3% when you sell your house. They want you to pay an exit tax if you flee the tyranny that's here in California. They're taxing billionaires. They're taxing everybody. But if you're a union member, you're kind of a different standard there. If you get CalPERS, we really, in all fairness, we really do have to add in 20 things you didn't earn just so that you can retire at $1 million a year for doing a job that most people would kill to get for a third that money. I was just looking at that California website that Patrick listed, and that's a regular deputy in L.A. makes $600,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of why I bounce around on it from time to time, is because it's always kind of shocking to see some of these positions in California, in local government, and then I just happened to stumble on this, and there may be other things out there too, other bills, who knows, Sacramento, as Mark's passing 1,000 bills a year. We have no idea what they're doing.
No, and I know, the sheriff in Siskiyou County, I think, makes $125,000, and the average deputy's on food stamps here.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's just, that's the standard that we're supposed to look up to, is people who are willing, they're willing to take money in an unscrupulous fashion. Yeah, it might be legal. There are cases when murder's legal, but it's still not nice, and it's not a good idea. I mean, it just kind of destroys your confidence in the agent and the agency, And what do you know? We live in a more lawless society. Well, what the hell do we care about stealing when the sheriff himself is stealing, in essence? And that's the way this works. But I wanted to mention one other thing real quickly. The en banc panel did take the case. They vacated the prior finding. On June 1st this year, oral arguments will be held in Seattle, again in front of an en banc panel to rehear the ban on the open carry of loaded weapons.
It's just tiring. Maybe wrong word is unbelievable, yeah. But it's...
Well, once again, when you live in a lawless state, you expect lawlessness from the courts.
That's why we need a new one.
Now, Mark, there is a bit of a bright lining in this, in that they're going to reverse it, and yeah. I think the probability of the U.S. Supreme Court picking it up is almost all but certain.
Well, I agree, Patrick. I mean, there is only one reason for an en banc to pick up a case. That's because they don't like the way it turned out and they want to overturn it. That's the only reason they would have. If they liked the way it turned out, they wouldn't take it en banc. So here we go. But once again, the court is going to be asked one question, just one. And so far, not even the panel that gave us the win directly answered this question. And that is a penal code, a statutory ban on the open carry of a loaded weapon constitutional? That's the only question we're asking the court. Should there be, and is it constitutional, for there to be criminal penalties for exercising a right that even all the judges in the case, including Mueller, admitted were covered by the Second Amendment, the open carry of a loaded weapon? That comports with the Second Amendment, and therefore it is presumptively constitutional, except in California and a few other states. So we're waiting for the court to answer that question. We're still waiting. But here we go again. Please contribute to keepandbear.com, and Wynn will give you the address for Pecan. Please help. This is going to be another $20,000-$30,000 that we don't have, but we have to win this case. This will send a signal to the state that the people do have some power here, and we've got to exert that power. We've got to start paying attention. The reason a sheriff can get $1 million a year in retirement is because people aren't paying attention. They're not watching the agencies that they've assigned to protect them, and we're not paying attention to government. We have to start doing that, or else this is all going to be over for us. And I think Patrick and Lori have made that case beautifully a million times. The only window we have to see whether government is actually doing the job we assigned it is because we are paying attention. And when we stop, then anything goes, and that's proven again and again, and that's what you're here talking about today. So anyways, God bless you for your work, and if you have any questions for me, I'll answer them, and otherwise I'll get off so you can finish.
We're going to go on our break, but we're going to let you double dip. After we talk about the DA, because I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts. So,
and also, too, let's follow up with the address if people want to contribute to the Keep and Bear. I want to give you the address of where you can mail your checks. You make the check out to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, in the memo portion on your check on the lower left corner, put 2A, and then you can mail it to 1304 East Street, Suite 110, Reading, 96001.
And we'll repeat that, but right now we have to go off to our one and only break. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get her done.
Amen.
Premier Oil Change is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Reading, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palisadro location.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With our slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Sally Lou, good job. Oh, he must have read the note that we got here just now when he figured out that song. Welcome back, everybody, to Repose with Janet Chandler and Lynn Carpenter with Patrick and Lori Jones. We're going to be talking now about the DA and what Patrick has uncovered there. This is, again, the shot heard around Shasta County, the last couple of shows we've had here.
Yeah, and so, you know, this thing goes back a couple years. Most people are familiar that there is a lawsuit pending. We're in court. We'll be back in court on, I believe, early the first week in August, and looks like it's moving forward, so this thing has some traction. And so it goes back into the year 2023, if I'm not mistaken. I was chair. And we had a brand new CEO, Dave Rickert. We finally got the contract signed and he was hired. And so he was on the job for 2 weeks. He, caught me in the hall, one day and said, hey, that investigation on the DA is wrapping up. And, I said, I don't know about it, any investigation. He goes, well, talk to Support Services, Monica, if you get. And I said, okay. So I go to see Monica and I said, Monica, Dave said something about a DA investigation. She goes, yeah, it's wrapping up. And I said, yeah, that's what he said. I said, I haven't heard of it. And he goes, yeah, cause we don't tell you about them. And I go, what? And she goes, well, just any investigation. We don't tell the board. And I said, all the investigations? She said, yeah. And I said, well, that's going to change. Well, it hasn't changed. And so far, the only internal investigation that's come out is that one, because I got it to the board, and we voted on it. And on a 3-2, we put it out to the public. And so a whistleblower that worked inside the DA's office came forward and said in the 22 primary, Stephanie Bridget got way behind on that race, and so she spent 80-90% of her time campaigning on county time. She knew it was illegal, but she felt that if Stephanie wasn't going to win, and it looked like she wasn't, that Eric Jensen was coming out strong, well-financed, and hitting the ground hard, that they would lose their jobs, which really wasn't true, but that's what was being said in that office. And their productivity in the office went down substantially, and it started affecting a lot of cases here in Shasta County. Now, when you have And so there was an investigation. County hired an investigator, John Beers, and he did a typical county investigation. Here's where you start, and here's where we need you to finish, and just fill the stuff in between, and let's get this over, and we'll put it in the file, and no one will ever see it. So he did an investigation, but he still could not get past the point where Stephanie admitted to doing it, and the sustained allegation that her and her subordinates campaigned on county time were sustained, even on that investigation that was never going to see the light of day. And so once I read that, I said, hey, that's exactly what I saw too. And so I became whistleblower number two, filed a complaint with the county. Now that she has admitted to the fraud, county council's job is to sue her for fraud. And it's not just an allegation of fraud. She's admitted to the fraud, and a whistleblower is admitted to the fraud. The investigator that did this investigation, out of 100 people, he interviewed 5. So you could tell he didn't really want to get to the full truth. He just wanted a little bit, call it good, and said, yeah, it's de minimis. And have a good night. No one would ever see it. Now, normal CEO wouldn't have given it to the board, right? All the ones in the past, the boards have never seen any investigation. We have no idea of all the whistleblowers that were out there coming forward. Now, I tried to get Joe Larmer, he's our current county counsel, to move forward on doing his job and filing suit on a county employee, if you will, that created substantial fraud. And he started stalling. I even found an investigator and said, use this guy, you know. Oh, can't do that. Stalled. And he was stalling to the point where, one, he knew I would be out of office, and two, the statute of limitation was running out, and the thing would be moot. And so it left me no option to do two things. One, I have to lose my whistleblower status. I can't be quiet about it anymore. I have to file suit because it's going to go away, because obviously county council is not doing his job. And so not too many attorneys want to take on the DA. But I found one good patriot of an attorney that has grabbed the bull by the horns, and we're moving down that path, and it's still moving. And I'm going to love getting to the time where we get to depose all 100 people that ever worked in that office. And we're going to get time sheets. We're going to get your emails. We're going to get everything that was ever said during that time period. And then we're going to be questioning you, every single person. And so that's going to be fun. And we will get to the bottom of it. And again, it wasn't what I intended to do. I'm not supposed to be doing that. County Council is supposed to be doing it. They're not doing their job.
Patrick, isn't there also some requirements as far as following up with the whistleblower? Aren't they required by law?
Yeah, so when I filed my whistleblower complaint, it is a requirement that you conduct a thorough and impartial investigation, which was never done. And county council knew the type of fraud that occurred. It was obvious. And there are several board members that witnessed the fraud. And so he failed to follow the policy where you have to do a follow-up investigation. And they were going down that direction, but then I suspect what they felt was that this is going to cost the county a lot of money. Yeah, when an employee does something bad, and they defraud the citizens, they defrauded me and you. If you're a taxpayer in Shasta County, you've been defrauded.
It already cost the county a lot of money.
Right.
And who is paying for Stephanie Bridget's defense?
Yeah, and so there was another issue there, and I went before the board, and I asked them to not defend Stephanie. She's already admitted to the guilt, you know, so this is not something that's within the scope of her work. And you do not defend, and so even if there's just an allegation of fraud, you don't defend that person. But in this particular case, it's quite a bit more than an allegation of fraud, because she's admitted to the fraud. And so she needs to represent herself and not have the taxpayers do that. Well, the board, on a 4-1 vote, decided to defend her. So it's a mistake. We're going to be asking the court that the county step aside, because she has admitted to the fraud and that she needs to represent herself and save the taxpayers some money.
How many times did you go to the board prior to filing suit asking for some type of relief?
It was every month, so at least a dozen times, you know, and I'm pressuring the chair, I'm pressuring Joe Larmer, I'm pressuring the CEO, I'm asking, and not getting anything done. And certainly in 2024, I started stepping that up because I knew I'd be out of office by 2025, and so I needed to get this done, get this investigation done, and then determine the course of action from there. And they just stalled and stalled, so it was exhausting. I mean, I don't know the exact number, but it's 10, 15, 16
conversations. What are they afraid of? What does she have over them?
Well, she is the DA, and so she's kind of your top law enforcement officer of the county, and obviously they know the substantial amount of fraud that occurred. It's obvious. And so they're afraid that, one, you're dealing with the DA that can be vindictive, and also this could cost the county money. Yeah. You know, but that's what I wanted to see out of this board, is that you don't cover up stuff.
Right.
If you do something wrong, you admit it, you pay for damages, and you move on, right? And that way it doesn't happen again, you know. And you take action on the person that did the fraud. This isn't about me. It shouldn't be about me. This is about the DA committing fraud.
Well, how many other departments have done the same thing with elected officials? If it's the DA that you take down, then are they going to squeal that maybe another department that has an elected official may have done the same thing?
Yeah, and you know, on this particular case, I saw it firsthand. I mean, that was a very interesting 2022 primary.
Right.
And the top ticket of all six of those races was probably the DA race. It was probably the most heated, I would say.
Right.
And so we went to every debate. We watched them. We saw all her staff showing up everywhere, you know, boardroom at every debate, mm-hmm. you know. And also what was interesting was that her staff was throughout the entire day online battling the mm-hmm. keyboard warriors that were out there.
Yep.
All day, every day. Huge amounts of wasted time. We saw that. We have those people, and they will be coming forward and talking about the people that they engaged within that office. It was constant and relentless for months and months. Stephanie got behind. She didn't have a campaign manager. She didn't have an account. She thought she was going to be running unopposed. Mm-hmm. And here comes a young guy, a young lawyer that's well-financed, and she got behind quick. And when you get behind on races, you don't get – there's no time to catch up. If
right.
you get behind, you are out. And she got behind. And so she started using her staff, and it's exactly what whistleblower number one said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here's somebody that has already said that. I came forward, and whistleblower number two said the same thing, and this is where county council's office has failed miserably. They needed to grab this bull by the horns, admit to the wrongdoing.
And they need to do their job as well.
Absolutely, and they didn't do it. And
they're failing the county.
So, Patrick, can you go back a little bit? Because she did apparently create a fear within her office because these employees fear of losing their job.
Right.
And I know there's a certain turnover when in any offices, if like a new DA or that. But what you said vindictive. I mean, Lord knows it took a lot of guts for you to step forward and do this because why don't you reiterate a little bit about during the Modi recall and what some of the DA staff did to some mothers and with kids?
Yeah, in fact, I called the DA. In fact, it's the only time I ever have called the DA during the Modi recall. As soon as the proponents filed their paperwork with their signatures, the DA's office took a look at those signatures. And what they saw, which was not illegal, was that in some cases in a particular household, when we would go knock on the door or the proponent would knock on the door and ask for, you know, would you like to sign this to recall Leonard Modi? So they would, the wife, say the husband had shakes, you know, he had a hard time writing. So the wife would write in the address for herself, and then she would sign, and then she would write her address in, and then he would sign. And that's allowed. Now, the addresses are obviously done by the same handwriting, which is allowed.
Right.
The signatures are different, and you can see that his are scribbly.
Right.
Right, because he's having a hard time. That happened three times. So the DA saying, hey, that's illegal. They didn't, you know, you can't fill that out. Well, it's absolutely allowed.
Wow.
And so they sent two investigators to two proponents' houses, which happened to both be young ladies, and threatened them and said, you know, if these signatures are illegal, you are going to be arrested, put in prison, and Child Protective Services will take your children. And so they called me immediately, and so I called the DA and said, hey, this is intimidation, this is electioneering engineering, and it is illegal, and you need to stop now. I'm filing a complaint. She goes, we don't have a complaint form. I said, you need to make one. And click, that was the conversation. So that type of intimidation, she sent two deputy DAs out to their homes and threatened those people. It's illegal.
Wow.
And that's the DA. And so the average person wouldn't know that, right? Because, you know, she does the coke drives and she does this and she does that and,
yeah,
you know, all the fun stuff, right? But then you get behind the scenes and you see some of these things. And, you know, and I suspect a lot more because we only know, you know, what we know. And we have friends all throughout government. We have friends inside the DA's office. We have them inside probation. We have them everywhere.
Right.
So we eventually will hear the truth, and it will come out. And in this particular case, the DA did something very wrong, and she has not been punished for it yet. Hopefully in court we will get justice, and as we all know, getting justice in court is difficult. You know, but I'm hoping that we will see some justice. The case is still moving forward. I'm reasonably sure county council said, ah, this thing's not going anywhere, it's nothing, right?
Well, explain to us why, if she was elected in 2022, she's not up for a re-election in 2026.
Well, the governor, our wonderful governor, God bless him, he extended all sheriffs and all DAs an extra 2 years to get them on a presidential cycle. Why? Because that's the times where they like to cheat. And that's exactly why they did it. No other reason. Not even sure if it's lawful to do that, but he just did it.
I don't think it is.
And, you know, when you talk about the county council there, Shasta Anon just did a video. You folks should look at that. I mean, he didn't file a title on summary on Measure B. You know, he wouldn't do that. That's against the law. He took the Shasta 5 to recommended taking them to court. He stalled Patrick. He gave advice to defend the DA based on a case of inappropriate conduct by a counselor in a school with a student. I mean, it just, the list goes on and on and on with this guy, yet I'm told by our supervisors he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, I mean, it's getting harder and harder for me.
I've cut out all bread in my diet.
Yeah, I think maybe I should too, because it's, you know, it's just getting harder and harder to defend the actions of people who I care about on this board of supervisors. Yeah, it's just getting too hard to defend the actions.
Well, I like
the red light camera.
Right.
I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, it's.
I mean,
just
I like Joe Larmer. I mean, he's a nice personal guy. He's from around here. He's got a family. I mean, I like the guy. I just think he's given some very bad legal advice.
But you have to take the advice.
Well, they don't. And unfortunately, this board, because they're relatively new in politics, they're taking his advice when they should be getting second advice. When I was on city council for 8 years, I could quickly see that our city council or our city attorney was giving bad advice regularly. And I would disagree with him and had some heated arguments with him regularly. Mm-hmm. And I had 8 years of that to prepare me for this. And so just because an attorney says something, you know, in every court case, when it goes to court, one of the attorneys is wrong every time. Every time. So they're batting about 50% in accuracy. And so you learn that. And so while he is a nice guy, and I like him, he's giving bad legal advice, and you need to back it up. We have a CEO that's tends to be a little bit hands off, and I wish he would be more assertive. And the legal counsel has, you know, they're not an elected official. It's just simple advice, and you don't have to take any of it. And there's to this board shouldn't.
Right.
Now keep in mind, I remember back after 3 years of elected service. How new I was and how, you know, and I read so much of staff reports constantly, you know, and meeting and meetings and all the things that you did. But you were under a lot of stress, right? And so that's where this board's at, right? I mean, and this is more of a meat grinder than City Hall ever was.
Oh, yeah.
The people, we don't have great names for them. We call them wackadoos or crazies or something. I don't know what you call some of these people, but they're just out there, right? I most of them appear to be socialists to me, but they are just constant. They're loud. They're rude. They're profane. They're just, and they're, you know, they're constant, right? And that, and you want to be liked, right? Most people, you know, we're usually pretty likable people. I can think of a few that aren't, but, you know, and so here you get into that position. You want to be liked. You want to make good decisions. You want to be liked. And then you're getting yelled out by some really wild people. And that stress does play on you. And because they're relatively new, they're going to lean on staff. And that's where the mistakes are happening.
Isn't the board elected to basically check staff? I mean, staff does bring things forward and they do a lot of work and there's a lot of great people down there, but is the board's job to question that and make sure in fact what's being put forward is correct and truthful and right?
Well, you know, and I appointed Joe. You know, I was one of the three of the votes to get him there, right? And he started off really good, far better than anything that I saw that we had. I mean, Ruben Cruz, what a nightmare that was. Yeah. Matt McCumber, Jim Ross, I mean, all backstabbing attorneys that withheld entire cases from us. I mean, no breaking laws. I mean, just really bad stuff. And so Joe was definitely better than that. And so, you know, I'm thankful for that. The problem here is that I think he has a fundamental problem of not admitting when there is wrongdoing. He cannot do that. He will not do that. He has not done that. He would not admit there's something that county employees or the county did wrong. And it's just not honest.
So is he afraid of, if he mentions it or affirms it, then he's holding the county liable for that?
In his mind, he's doing his job because he's trying to reduce the liability to the county. And so covering things up, because that's what I'm going to call it, is acceptable because it could save the county money. And so in his mind, he's doing what he's hired to do. That's not what I hired him to do. You know,
is that what we hired the board to do? Did we hire the board to cover up things? Or I guess, you know, right. I mean, how long are they rookies? How long does it take? And you talk about the controversy, and that's a great point because all the crap they have to take. But, you know, doesn't that sort of wear on you after a while? Don't you kind of think, well, gee, maybe I ought to question this decision since every single thing that our attorney's been telling us on these things that are going on in the public, we haven't been able to justify them. I mean, what's the justifiable position? Well, you know, he's a really good guy. I mean,
you know, there's a lot of things that Joe was going to give that will be good information, but obviously there's some information that's wrong. For example, I got a bill on my project that I had with resource management. I got a bill for $5,000. And I had my own attorney. I was going to court. It had nothing to do. There was no county presence there or anything. But I still got a bill for $5,000. And it was all redacted. And so I asked Joe. I said, Joe Larmer, I said, you know, could you unredact it? I mean, if I'm going to pay a $5,000 bill, I'd like to see what I'm being charged for. No, we won't unredact it. So I had to go to the board and get them on a slim 3-2 vote. They unredacted it. And what it showed was they billed me for an hour here, 2 hours there, from a firm that had already said there's a conflict of interest, we cannot work on your case. And yet they were working on my case in conjunction with Joe Larmer and getting me billed for a whole year, hour here, hour there.
And they billed us after the case was closed and over, and we had already paid the other attorney and our own attorney.
And they said on Joe Larmer again?
Yeah, and this is all Joe, and then the board had to unreject it. Joe wouldn't, and then they said, if you don't pay this bill, and I said, well, I don't think it's right. They said, well, we're not going to start your EIR contract until you pay that bill. So I had to pay that bill $5,000. Then I gave them another check for $8,000 so that they could create the contract for my EIR. And in the contract, the new contract on the EIR says, you will not see any individual billing items, and we can bill you more if we want, and you do not get to look at what we're billing you for once again. And this was all Joe Larmer.
Holy.
Well, I mean, why do we keep giving, again, it's hard for me. Do the board of supervisors know this, Patrick?
There's a few that do.
And the ones that do are going along with it?
Yeah, they're not taking a
because serious. They're new.
They're not taking it interest.
Well, I'm with you. There is no excuse for being new. If you aren't capable of taking the job and doing the job the day you take the oath, then you shouldn't be there.
Well, I'm sure we're not the only ones this is happening to, and that's what I'm saying when the elected supervisors are in there. Mm-hmm. You need to look at what's going on. Look at these contracts. When people come to you with facts, then explore it. Don't just ignore it.
And so, you know, I know we're limited on time here, but so obviously with what's happening with the sheriff and the double dipping, the tax collector double dip, the DA, you know, and all these things, you know, I didn't want to be involved in all these things. I would rather go, you know, horseback riding or something else, but they weren't getting done, and I'm just not going to simply stand by and not inform the public of what's happening and try the best that I can to right these wrongs. The county will be better for it in the end.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's,
well,
you know.
Well, thank you for doing it. Thank you for being willing to step up and do it, because clearly nobody else
will. And we've got to leave it there. And time has come.
For 51.
And boy, are we getting it done.
We need to get it done. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Lori.
Amen.
I'm a rattlesnake with diamonds on my back. And other men retreat, that's just the time.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.